Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we get together with Sue Kim, the chairman of Bally's Corporation, the former Twin River Holdings, about the aggressive moves the company has been making in the past year. 20 years ago, IGT transformed the industry by introducing cashless gaming with Tito. Now IGT is revolutionizing cashless yet again. Learn more about IGT's resort wallet at igt.com/cashless. From a small casino in Rhode Island to a national brand encompassing nearly every manner gaming is consumed in the 2020s, Sue Kim has directed the explosive growth of the new Bally's Corporation over the past several years. Kim is embracing the disruptive elements of interactive gaming and extending the company's efforts into technology, media, and entertainment. Kim explains how the plan has evolved and how he's been busy implementing it with the purchases of new casino properties, gaming technology companies, and joint ventures with media and entertainment companies, and reviving, of course, the classic Bally's brand. He spoke with me in April for the May cover of the magazine. The interview was conducted prior to the purchase of the Tropicana in Las Vegas in late April. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's good to be with everybody today. And our guest today is Sue Kim, the chairman of Bally Corporation. Sue, thanks for joining us. And it was really nice to meet you in Las Vegas the other day.
Well, Roger, thanks for having me. And it was a pleasure to meet as well.
So, as I said to you the other day, I have been covering gaming for over 35 years now, and I've never seen a company grow as quickly as yours did, since 2020. It's just been an amazing growth spurt here, and the fact that you're in so many channels of delivery for gaming, I think that's the most impressive part for me. So I'm glad you could join us.
Well, thank you for those kind words. Again, I think a lot of it is really just opportunistic. We were able to, make lemonade out of lemons.
Sure,
obviously,
right.
COVID, hit us pretty hard, like everybody else. I mean, we had, our Twin River Lincoln Rhode Island casino was, I believe, the second casino in the country to close. We also stared at the precipice like everyone else.
Sure.
We benefited from the fact that we had a good balance sheet, owned all our property coming into the, and so had no rent burden coming into the crisis. And so we were able to at least, have some financial wherewithal and confidence that we were going to, make it out to see the other end. And,
sure.
I personally have a sort of an opportunistic investing background. So I was able to sort of help share that mindset with the company and, again, make opportunity from the crisis.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, it's worked out okay.
Yeah. So let's just start with the name. Bally's is such a traditional and very well-known name in the gaming industry. It's gone through lots of iterations from a slot company to operations it was owned by Caesars for a while, Hilton for a while, and frankly, when Caesars, became Caesars after the Harrah's transition, it kind of fell by the wayside, and you were able to pick it up for a really good price. What did you think really attracted to do to the name itself, the brand?
Yeah, so thank you for that. Yeah, look, I mean, when we were looking at the potential to buy the Bally's AC, it did cross my mind that maybe we're able to buy the name. Actually, we asked the Caesars folks that were selling it at the time, in anticipation of the merger with Eldorado, if they were willing to sell it. They said no, but when Eldorado ultimately closed on the purchase of Caesars, we went to Eldorado and said, would you sell the name? And they said yes. So we're really thankful to Eldorado for entrusting us with, I believe, one of the iconic names in gaming.
Sure.
I mean, the reason to own it minute and esoteric, was that, practically speaking, it saves us the expense of having to rename, Valley's Lang City. But really, it was much more than that. Yeah. I mean, look, we had a plan. We've been operating with a plan to figure out, what do we do in this world of online gaming?
Right.
It's a massive disruptor to the industry as a whole. And how do we choose to sort of face this disruption? And what we've done is, we've chosen to face it in a positive way and embrace the change and not be as scared of it. And so what we said to ourselves is, look, if we're going to, technology is going to disrupt us, then we're going to disrupt ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so as part of that, we came up with a plan. Okay, well, what do we need to do to be relevant in an online future, or really what it is an omni-channel future.
Because
the future will have casinos. It'll just have an online component to it, to the customer journey. And what we said to that is that, look, we want to, in an online future, I think we want an expanded footprint. That's one of the things we wanted. We frankly wanted a unified identity, because again, regional identity makes sense in a physical world. But online across the nation, having one brand, I think, makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
So we had that vision coming into this. And so not only do we want to expand our footprint, have a singular brand positioning, and then, purchase our own technology, which were probably the three, sort of major sort of strategic pillars we had when we were going in and deciding what we wanted to do. When we had an opportunity to buy Bally's AC and then potentially buy the Bally's brand name, that was, wow, well, okay, well, we can knock off, at least one of those pillars, because Bally's is a wonderful brand name. Obviously, it's an iconic name that's been around for 100 years.
Sure.
Actually, I love the roots as a pinball company.
Right.
I think machines for the midway, I love those entertainment, engaging, audience roots, because frankly, in some ways, as gambling goes online, it in some ways becomes more omnipresent, ever present.
Right.
And because it's ever present, I think in some ways you have to kind of like tone down the gambling part.
Right.
And you know what I mean? Because you can't sort of hit people with gambling all the time.
Right.
So, I think. What we want to do is position ourselves as the interactive entertainment brand.
Right.
And Bally's, started as an entertainment brand. Mm-hmm. At one point, Bally's owned amusement parks.
That's right. Yeah.
And sports clubs, mm-hmm. and gyms. And I think that's just great. I love that history. I mm-hmm. love the history of the name.
Yeah.
We're going to bring that spirit back.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with a renaming of the Bally's of the Fox Sports Networks to Bally Sports Networks, it's the first major step on the pathway where we're going to become more than a gaming company, more than a gaming technology company. We want to essentially have a media presence.
Sure.
And I just feel like Bally's in that world is just an unparalleled brand, because it can be so flexible across the various worlds that we want to be work across.
Right, great. Well, let's touch on all those components you mentioned there. But let's start with the land-based casinos. Twin River was a pretty small company with a monopoly in Rhode Island, but it's kind of like being a big fish in a small pond. And then when you consider the massive casinos across the border in Connecticut, and then later in Massachusetts, it's a pretty amazing feat for you to have expanded beyond this. Why did you think you could expand so quickly and still remain profitable?
Well, look, I think that's a great. I think it really reflected a lot of our personal, like, this is sort of Standard General and my personal investing values or capital allocation values, which is to say that, when we first involved ourselves with the Rhode Island project, Twin River, there was a lot of fear. There was a lot of fear that, oh, Massachusetts will eventually legalize. Maybe there'll be more tribal competition. there's just a lot of overhang. And, you know, what we made a determination is, well, look, that is true. However, you know, being the largest, you know, taxpayer to the state means the state itself, you know, we pay a 70%+ effective tax rate,
right?
You know, the state itself has an incentive to help you make sure your business runs well, because you're such an important part of the state in a budget. So, you know, with the expansion into table games, 24-hour gaming, and now online gaming, the state has worked with us to continue to allow us to sort of keep up, even if there's been continued sort of like supply pressure,
sure,
in the greater region. But here's the other thing, but more importantly than that, and that has helped, right? Is the fact that look, Roger, every you know, super strong, you know, fortress business eventually becomes weak,
right?
You know, it's sure, just a right. matter of time, whether it's, you know, it's 20 years or 20 months. No one should feel certain about anything, and no one should believe that they are so awesome. I mean, look, Bally's, think about Bally's itself. Bally's, right, on Park Place, you know,
sure, right,
Boardwalk, yeah, and Park Place. It was the center of East Coast gaming for years, right? And mm-hmm, and now, you know, it was essentially given away for a song,
right?
You know, and that actually reflects the spirit by which we know every business operates in. You should never feel, in the same way as you should not be panicked that your business is facing trouble, because every business is facing trouble, is what would be my counter,
right?
You know, you just have to embrace, you know, difficulty and trouble and headwinds as something that is a natural part of the evolution of business life and life in general. And know that, you know, that uncertainty gives you some sort of, I think, some impetus and motivation to take chances,
sure,
to move forward, to treat, you know, treat things like things will eventually change, and so you got to move forward. So with Rhode Island and the expanded competition around us, you know, that overhang for some was, I guess, sort of obvious for us, you know, and said, sure, hey, this is how it always is. So let's take our position now and let's try to improve it, and let's just keep moving. And improving it meant improving it in state by additional opportunities we worked with our regulators to get. And then let's go and spread out. And look, again, we weren't on the board when they bought Biloxi, but we were a large shareholder and we were supportive of it. And that was the first property away from Rhode Island. And then, you know, eventually we've now added more, you know? And so, you know, we were on the board and pivotal to, you know, doing the reverse merger into Dover Downs and helping build Tiverton. So, you know, we move forward so that we survive. And because look, if you stand in one place for a long enough time, you're going to get hit by a safe falling from the sky.
Right.
So look at us now. Like, you know, people used to call us a Rhode Island story, and now, I don't know, is Rhode Island like, you know, 20% of, you know, of our profits or something?
Right,
like that?
Sure.
I have to think about that. Yeah, maybe be a little higher. But it's, you know, it's like in the maybe 30, you know, but like, it's you know, it just keeps going down, right? First it's
sure,
like
right,
you know,
yeah,
it's 100, then it's like 80, then it's 50, and then now it's 30, and
right,
then look, if we keep moving, it'll be less than that, and
right,
and then all of a sudden then we're you know, diversification is in itself a defense against you know, the tides of everything else falling apart.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned the Biloxi property, the Hard Rock in Biloxi, and then the next purchase took was Dover Downs. But was that just a vehicle to do that reverse merger to go public, or did you see opportunity there as well?
Oh, Dover was great.
Right.
I mean, it's great in a number of different fronts. First of all, we added into our shareholder base and our ownership group a wonderful executive. His name is Jeff Rollins. Jeff was the family owner and control shareholder of Dover when it was a tiny little public company. And we said, look, you know, let's join up, and your piece of this will be worth a lot more than it is. And look, I think we've, you know, I think he's been, you know, I think he's seen our words come to life, you know, and now he's one of six directors of a, you know, of a, you know, he was a controlling shareholder of a company that had a $25 million market cap. And now he's one of six directors in a company that has, you know, a $2+ billion market cap. And, you know, his own asset, you know, at the time when we first started looking at it, it was doing about $7 million of cash flow. You know, right when we were getting involved, we helped with the effort to get some regulatory relief on taxes and get that cash flow go up to about 14. But then on top of that, we also, you know, with our management team, you know, and, you know, working their marketing schedule and more efficiently operating their assets, you know, Dover is now doing in the low 20s.
Right.
So, and we ultimately ended up paying about $100 million for Dover. So at the time when you know, that's a healthy premium to like the $30 million that stock was at before we got there. You know, when it was doing just $7 million cash flow, I guess $100 million would be a lot of money. But we knew it was going to do at least 14, so that was, I guess, not an unreasonable price. And look, we've made it do in the low 20s, and that $100 million looks like a song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's been pretty. I mean, and you know, the other thing we did is we actually ended up that became one of the two properties we have leased. So we did sell that into the sale lease back with Gaming Leisure Properties.
Mm-hmm.
We generated, I want to say, like 160 or 50 million of cash, and we still own essentially half of the company, right? Not bad for buying something for 100 million of stock, taking 100 million of cash, 150 million of cash out, and still having about the same amount of cash flow as you thought you were going to have when you bought it in the first place. Actually, it was a small deal, but those things, Roger, actually, when you do one good deal, what it does, it helps you do future deals because it gives you more capacity, more confidence. And so actually Dover was a very important deal, even though it was a small deal, because it worked out so well in such a short period of time that allowed that snowball effect to keep rolling down the hill.
Great. So last year you added at least 9 properties. I'm not going to list them all here because you know them better than I do. But then you got the mini license for a mini casino in Pennsylvania. How are you going to staff and manage all those properties, you know, that you acquired in really a pretty short time?
It's a great question. Look, I mean, a number of the properties have, you know, pretty good managers that we've been able to keep. These were actually, a lot of these were purchases, but historically we do a lot of mergers. So in mergers, you know, we keep a lot of the people actually, and we keep a lot of the best people. Obviously we try to keep all the best people. And so look, we have a growing team. We didn't have a corporate office for a very long time because we essentially had one company, you know, we had one facility. Even when we had two, we didn't really have a corporate office. When we had four, we started to build one, and, you know, frankly, we're continuing to build our corporate office here. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is, you know, we've been able to hire people, including people that we've in the properties that we've purchased. But you know, look, frankly, it's been a challenge, you know, for us to, you know, sort of just keep up with the pace of it. But look, our team's doing great. You know, George, Phil, they've done a great job. We can't, you know, the whole team has done a great job.
I know a lot of those guys you mentioned, and they're quality people. You know, they've got tons of experience in gaming, and when you add your vision to it on top of that, I think you've got a really good core to start this business going on.
Thank you. No, I can't agree more. We've just been really fortunate to look again, you know, people like George and Phil were there before I got there,
right?
You know,
sure.
And then, you know, obviously we've added Steve as, you know, the CFO, and we've built the team as we've added elements of the team. Marcus fully rebranded from G-Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's organic. It's gradual. We try to find the right people, and we give them a lot to do. You know how they say, right? If you want something done, you give it to a busy person.
Right. Exactly.
Well,
right.
Our team is busy.
Yeah.
And continually growing, and we're always looking for good people.
Sure. So, you promised the regulators in most of these jurisdictions that you were going to, you know, improve the properties there. You know, upgrade them. You know, how are you going to fund all that?
Oh yeah, I mean, look, our company on a run rate basis. I mean, look, again, we had obviously we got caught a little bit in the slowdown at the end of 2020, the third wave, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Rhode Island actually reclosed, you know, Illinois reclosed,
right.
So and then there have been restrictions, additional restrictions on properties in Delaware and Colorado and whatnot. So we had some really good free cash momentum. We've been generating free cash since the third quarter, right? So only
right.
one quarter, second quarter of 2020, we didn't. Third quarter, we generated plenty of free cash. Fourth quarter, we did, but we, you know, we actually went downward because of the, you know, and now, you know, just after, I would say about February, you know, we've really started to build momentum. Look, you know, we're going to generate on a run rate basis over $300 million of EBITDA,
right?
With relatively low maintenance capex and relatively low interest expense. I mean, we believe that we'll generate over 150 easily of free cash flow every year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that works out to, you know, at least $4 a share. And we intend to invest a chunk of that in our, look, historically, like, I don't know if you may know this, but right after we went public, we actually bought back a third of our float, our shares outstanding.
Right.
We went from 40 million shares outstanding to 30.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been generating cash this whole time.
Right.
Some years, we'll when we like our stock price, we'll go out and buy a ton of shares, and we've done that. And then some years when we like the, we did that during the time when, you know, when there was that consolidation wave that started like, you know, 16, 17.
Right.
But all the properties were going at very high prices, like
yeah.
10 times EBITDA or higher. And frankly, we didn't, you know, we didn't participate in a lot of that because, you know, we were trying to stick true to our knitting. You know, we've really been able to acquire properties at 7 or better across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But when we can get properties, Roger, in that zone, we'll buy every single one.
Yeah, right.
Which
right.
is what we've shown.
Okay.
You know, so
sure.
So we try to be disciplined. We try to have spare capacity. But what that does is also what that means is, look, we'll buy properties at those prices, but a lot of times that means that those properties are a little roughed up, right? They're a little
right,
banged
sure,
up,
right?
And there really hasn't been a ton of reinvestment. So we factor in that we expect to put more money in those kind of properties after we buy it. So Kansas City, even Biloxi, we actually, you know, right after we closed the property, we finished tower, although it
yeah.
started
mm-hmm.
before we owned it. But, you know, we built Tiverton, we built onto the Rhode Island project. We put an hotel tower in. Kansas City, we have a pretty significant build going. AC will have a pretty significant build going. So no, we want to spend money. Look, I think we believe in the retail physical experience.
Mm-hmm.
We want our customers to have a really good outcome. It doesn't have to be over the top.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people like to spend over the top money. That's not who we are. But we think that we can do a very good job.
Sure. Okay.
You know? And so we're going to continue to. There's years where we're buying casinos. There's years where we're buying back our own shares.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a pretty solid plan to be reinvesting in our own footprint over the next, you know, year and a half or 2 years. But it helps that we generate $150 million a year of free cash.
Sure. Absolutely. Resort Wallet from IGT provides a digital wallet for all your players' gaming and retail needs. From card or cardless-based cashless transactions, your players will love the convenience of getting rid of cash and all the hassles associated with using cash. And with IGT Pay, IGT's exclusive payment gateway, your players can fund their cashless wagering accounts from multiple external sources simultaneously. The benefits of cashless gaming are amazing. No more waiting in lines at ATMs to get cash, no more waiting in lines to redeem your tickets, and no more waiting for service when your ticket printer jams. Learn more about IGT's Resort Wallet at igt.com/cashless. And now back to our podcast. So one of the obvious holes in your land-based portfolio is the lack of a Vegas property. And, you know, the one that comes to mind, obviously, since Caesars announced they want to sell one of their strip properties, is Bally's in Las Vegas. I mean, would you be interested in buying that at some price?
I mean, look, you know, nobody's bought more assets from Caesars, Eldorado Caesars, than we have in the last, like, 24 months here.
Well, you know them very well.
I don't think they're gonna sell that. Yeah. I think they're just killing it. Those Tom and Brent, those guys, they're just so good.
Yeah, they're smart guys.
I think that this purchase of William Hill is going to do great. I don't think they're selling assets. And look, I think we have a good enough relationship that if I thought that they were, I think that we would be, you know, amongst their first calls. I mean, look, you know, not only do we buy, you know, their divestiture assets in COVID, but more importantly, we closed purchases that we had arranged the year prior.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like, we have proven ourselves to be, a very, very credible buyer. You know, we do as we say. We don't make excuses. And I think that goes a long way with them, and really with anybody who's selling assets. I think, you know, we would get a call, you know, pretty quickly.
Right.
But I actually don't think that, I think Caesars is in great shape. I don't think that they're, my take on it is they're not going to sell a strip asset. And they definitely, you know, as much as it would be interesting, I don't think they would sell an asset that's right in the middle
of the heart of Vegas. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I don't see that happening.
Right. Okay, yeah. Great. So let's move on to sports betting. You mentioned the deal with Sinclair Broadcasting for the Fox Sports Network. I mean, I didn't see that one coming. What was the genesis, and what was the idea behind that?
I think, again, like a lot of things, a lot of it is timing. You know, look, obviously, I know the Sinclair guys well, because,
right.
You know, I actually had built a competitor called Young Media General at the same time that they were building up Sinclair, and people like Nexstar and Gray, other television station companies were being built. I had built a company and ultimately sold, you know, 77 TV stations making $450 million a year to Nexstar, which is now the largest. It had been that Sinclair was the largest broadcaster, but when Nexstar purchased ours, it leapfrogged and became the largest broadcaster. So the assets that we had built are now part of the largest broadcaster in the country, and Sinclair is number two. But we know these guys really well. We've worked with them for a long time. We've competed with them. We've worked together on things. We've bought assets from them. We've sold assets from them. So there's a lot of mutual respect. When they bought Fox Sports, I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, that's crazy.
Right.
You know, first, right? Because I was like, what does that even mean? Like, because it's so tied to cable, and cable's got a really hot, you know, heavy headwind, you know, that you have to deal with. But then, as we laid out our own strategic plan and realized how important sports was as part of that plan, you know, for our plan to be an omnichannel operator, physical technology, I was like, wow, you guys are genius.
Yeah.
And like, you guys have half of the sports in America. Remember, they also have Tennis Channel.
Right.
That Tennis Channel has 25,000 matches a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second most bet sport in the world.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, holy cow, you guys have a master plan. Now, I'm not 100% sure that they had a master plan, but I think they brought those assets together. In addition to the fact that they have all these NFL games on their local channels, that's it. Sinclair is is, you know, it's really got the biggest portfolio of local rights. ESPN's got the biggest portfolio of national rights. And actually the local ones are actually a lot more useful for, because sports betting is a localized business, right?
Yeah.
So when they signed the deal, like, or soon thereafter, I was like, wow, that's amazing. But, you know, frankly, we weren't ready to cut a deal with them. I assumed that they were going to cut a deal with a much larger person than ourselves.
Right, yeah.
But Roger, life is timing and luck, right? And so, you know, we first of all survived COVID, and then we ultimately made it an amazing opportunity for us. And we end up, and boom, 15 casinos across 11 states. We actually have the third best regional footprint.
Right.
And so, as we're building to the third best regional footprint, we went to them and said, hey, guys, we're actually could be a partner for you guys.
Right.
You know, and at the time they were running an RFP process, and there were some big names in there. But, you know, when we combined the fact that we had the third most extensive footprint, now we had the Bally's brand name. We didn't have that before, right?
Right.
And finally, we had started down the pathway of owning our own technology. I keep telling everybody, look, you know, Canby's great until they go down during the Super Bowl. You know? Right. And so our sportsbook didn't go down during the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. We control it. You
right.
know? So, with our purchases of, you know, BetWorks, Monkey Knife Fight, SportCaller, we're building out the technical capacity to actually deploy our own product.
Right.
And I think that was very attractive to Sinclair.
Yeah.
It was our access footprint, it was our technical capacity, our branding, all coming together to work with Sinclair's amazing footprint of rights. If we can bring this together in the right way, Roger, it's just huge.
Right, right. So you mentioned the BetWorks and SportsCaller acquisitions. So now you have a real solid platform to build upon. And again, you're not depending upon a supplier that is on multiple platforms. So is this something that you want to control, basically, so that you know that this platform works for you and you don't have to worry about any competitors at the same time?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, look, if you think about what the online companies do, online companies control their customer experience online.
Right.
They know who their customer is, and they bring them through a journey. I think in the physical world, I think that might be less important because, you know, it's about who owns what and on what corner. But online, everyone's equal, so it's important that, you know, you offer a better software, a better product, and then also keep better control of who you know who your customers are and keep them.
Right.
So, I think that with Sinclair's media rights, our technology, access footprint, and brand, you know, we really have the potential to put together a very differentiated product that really can not only give a customer a great experience at a physical casino, but also, pull them along online, and give them products that are really important to them, and just be part of the product. Remember, we didn't buy the naming rights to what is Bally Sports. We bought the integration rights.
It's not.
If you think about the current model, it's media, it's like the game, and then surrounded by advertising,
right.
Which, you know, frankly, if you watch games, it's mostly advertising for sports betting.
Sure, right?
We would never be able to compete in that format, right? How do you compete against guys burning hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, you know, to build up their brands and sports betting offerings? We said, look, we're not going to compete against that head on, but wait a second. If we go with the rights owner and try to create a different product, a new product, you know, an integrated product, right, that doesn't call for gaming, you know, in the breaks between the game,
right,
but actually presents the game in an integrated way,
right?
And Roger, again, remember I told you that what we're trying to do is actually not, it's really so hardcore hitting you with like sports lines and betting and betting and betting. Actually, I don't think that's great because when you are more ubiquitous, you're more omnipresent, I think you have to be more subtle.
Yeah.
You know?
No question.
And what we're trying to do is deliver more entertainment. Okay. We think that watching a game should be more interactive, should be more engaging, should be more entertainment. You know, I think what you're seeing right now, and every major rights owner of sports, you know, from team owners to leagues, and, you know, and they see it themselves, is the audiences are fragmenting and are disengaging from traditional media, even right. the big ones.
Sure,
right?
Right, right.
And so what I would argue is that part of that is because, meanwhile, there's like millions of people that watch other people play video games on the internet.
Right, yeah.
And you're like, whoa, what's going on yeah. here? And, you know, is it really that much more engaging to watch some, you know, video feed versus, you know, an actual somebody hitting a ball or running,
right.
something like that? And I actually don't think, I think that's pretty clear that that's not the advantage. The
right.
advantage is not the way it's rendered.
Right.
Okay. The advantage of this watching experience for video game is that it's more interactive.
Right.
You know, the experience is, you know, kids are watching video games, playing video games, talking to others about playing video games, talking to the people playing video games.
Right.
You know, could you imagine, Roger, if Ricky Henderson just stole second base, slid in, got up, you know, dusted off, stared at the camera and says, thanks, Bob from Saginaw, for giving me that $100 to run that much faster.
Right, you know? Yeah, sure.
Think about what that experience would be like,
right, right.
you know?
Well, you know,
like,
you talk about...
And that's what online media is.
Right.
Not the traditional sports, but if you look at the way, let's say, video gaming is, there is that interaction.
Sure. Well, you know, you talk about entertainment and that sort of aspect of the online engagement. I think that really explains your purchase of Monkey Knight Fight. I mean, when I first heard that, I thought, what a funny name, you know. And then we started to really learn about it, and these guys were really doing some really interesting things. So we became an affiliate marketing partner with them through our subsidiary, our iGaming Player, and you know, we've been a good partners with them, and they've done some incredible things, you know. So that's, I think, what you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly right. Roger, we love, look, Bill Asher built this amazing little business called Monkey Knife Fight over the last 4 years. It's a daily fantasy operator, which frankly, you know, there are no more left other than DraftKings and FanDuel.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, daily fantasy has two advantages for us. The first is actually really straightforward. It's legal in 40 plus states.
Right, sure,
so,
right, right.
So it's actually a real money game that's legal in 40 plus states. So, I mean, that, you know, it's a game of skill and has, you know, and so we think that, well, hold on here, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that DraftKings and FanDuel open up one or two in every state, you know, when
right.
they go to mobile sports betting. They just have these big databases from daily fans.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we said, all right, well, look, as part of our, remember, I told you this map that we had built.
Right.
Okay, what do we need to get to go down this road? What do we need to get? And we said, Daily Fantasy, on that map, you know, we need to figure out a solution there. And so I guess we could have done the, you know, sort of exclusive, and, you know, affiliation. And I said, you know what, let's just go see if Bill wants to sell.
Right,
you know? And,
yeah.
And luckily we, you know, he sold for all stock and, he,
yeah.
you know, he's pretty happy about that because our stock's done well and
sure.
so he's making more money.
Yeah.
You know, I keep telling everyone, when you sell into Bally's for stock, you're not actually selling.
Right.
You're just joining the team.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
and our team is a winning team. And we're going to win a lot of different fields.
Sure.
And everyone that comes to the team brings a skill that we need to fulfill this overall vision. But Monkey Knife Fight, also more importantly, is a game mechanic that's easy. You know, that doesn't require
right.
you to be some real sharp,
mm-hmm.
you know, to have an information edge.
Right.
You know, it's frankly probably a little more luck-based.
Yeah.
A little bit easier to for people to and interfaces are easier than plus 100, minus
right.
450.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's like, and I think that I love the spirit of that. It's not even the final product per se. I want to incorporate that spirit as we continue to develop our product
sure.
over the next
right.
few generations
right.
and keep the spirit of easier, engaging, entertaining, you know, across the board.
Right. Yeah. So you just announced last week another one of our iGaming Player partners, the purchase of Gamesys. We learned so much from them early on in New Jersey. I've been in their offices in Jersey City multiple times. You know, they were just very, very good in leading us into the iGaming world, and I'm sure they're teaching you guys a lot about that as well.
Yeah, look, I can't say too much about the actual details of the Gamesys transaction just because it's in this UK takeover code world. But look, we are very excited about rounding out our online offerings. If you think about the spectrum, obviously we started with mobile sports betting, right? Through BetWorks.
Sure.
But it was actually a B2B product, so we need to also build a B2C understanding there. Monkey Night Fight with a B2C product, Daily Fantasy. We bought a free-to-play gaming company called SportCaller, which is really interesting. That world is really interesting as well, because again, you do need to offer products to people to engage in your universe, even if they can't be offered mobile sports betting or FPI game. But as you know, iGaming is where the money really is.
Of course,
And you need to know how to do it, and you know how to operate. And in Gamesys, we found a company that just has been doing it for a long time. It's built a really differentiated product set, owns it, and we just thought this would be great. They're very profitable. They operate in relatively mature markets, and we said, hey, wait a second here. We can pay mature market prices and then bring them to the growth market, which is the U.S.
Right.
And again, this is one of those things where both parties, it's really a merger, right? It's a cash stock merger. And, we're bringing, our footprint, our brand, our what's called, and then our technology for sports betting, And then obviously our Sinclair relationship, our media relationship. And they bring, again, a very refined, actually bingo-led iGaming product, it has very good share in Europe, leading with bingo versus leading with sport, which we think is, it gives them a really interesting differentiated skill set. We can add our sports on top of that, and so sort of essentially hit both demographics and bring all that knowledge and expertise, and frankly, a team that's led by Lee Fenton, who's just, has been very impressive when as we've gotten to know him. And we're looking forward. Look, I've always told people that we want to be a tech company, and with the merger with Gamesys, we will be a tech company.
Yeah, no question.
And so, where tech and physical casinos are roughly about the same size.
Right.
It's kind of exciting.
Great. Oh, it's very exciting. What impressed me so much, every land-based casino is now making moves into iGaming. I mean, you have to. But you're doing it in a whole different manner. You're started as a land-based company, but you're really, again, by acquiring your own technology, you're not counting on some of these B2B providers to bring it to you. You're going to have all the assets in-house. And then that is going to translate to gaming experience for your customers, that you're going to be able to offer them the same gaming experience online as you do in your land-based casino. So how long do you think that's going to take to really put that together?
You're touching upon a lot of the things that are very important to us. Look, again, we've spoken about the importance for us to know and own our customer and then bring them through a journey, both at physical casinos and online. It's an interesting, you're presenting a few things that I'm not sure if I'm ready to talk about yet.
Yeah.
But I would just say you're absolutely on the right pathway.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to read from our framework, because we have it and we're still executing parts of it. I'm happy to tell you about the parts that we've executed,
but
the parts we haven't, not quite yet. But but look, it's again, honestly, Roger, these frameworks are common sense, right? Us and our team, and we sat down and we tried to think about what do we need to do. It's common sense, right? We said, all right, if we can whiteboard it all, like what would we have? How do we want to do it? Where do you think that goes? And where do you think that the next evolution and next evolution? And you sort of put it all out and said, and so I think that's exactly the way you said it. The way you said it was better than what I would be willing to say right now.
Okay, great.
So maybe we should leave it at that.
We will leave it at that for sure.
We would like to carry the customer through our experience, both when you sit down at one of our casinos and then and then when you go out.
Okay, great. Well, we'll leave it at that, but I just want to ask you one more question. Now, what can is this the end of your acquisitions, or are you still looking out there for other opportunities? And obviously, properties are always going to be out there, but
Okay. The best way to answer that, thank you, would be that, look, we define ourselves, as a tech company, but we're also a gaming company,
right.
and physical gaming experiences are very important. They're also profitable, so it's
right.
great.
Sure.
Unlike a lot of tech, some of the tech is not profitable, right?
Yeah.
So you got to be careful about with a company like Gamesys, there are profitable tech companies, and so we're trying to balance, make sure we have, the ability to fund and grow. Look, we are a gaming company, we're a technology company, we're a media company.
Right.
We're actually at all three.
Okay.
And I think you can make the assumption that we're going to continue to expand our expertise, our breadth, our offerings on all three. On the gaming side, it's obvious we are bidding on new projects. I'm sure we'll participate in additional M&A activities. That stuff will continually happen.
Right.
And, who knows? Maybe one day we will have a Vegas presence, right?
Right.
And then on the technology side, I would say that Gamesys is a very important anchor and sort of helps us really, I would say, complete the major pillars of what we think we need to own. But there are many other interesting technologies and businesses that we believe will fit really well into an online future, and especially the engaging and entertaining online future that we've talked about. So I think we'll continue to make acquisitions there. And then look, I mean, stay tuned on the media side, as they say in the media business, stay tuned. But we believe that, integration to media is our competitive advantage.
Yeah.
That if we won't have to buy any ads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
We'll if we present the right content, that itself will be the call into our platform.
Right.
And not that we won't buy ads. We'll buy ads too. We'll do traditional advertising as
right.
well. But again, knowing that I'm not going to be, I'm not going to have a competitive advantage there.
Yeah.
I need to create competitive advantages elsewhere. And we believe that I just happen to be, the right tool for this because
right.
I have a very extensive media background. So it's really sort of fascinating, Roger, in a way to combine my media background and my gaming background into this Bally's opportunity. It's
right.
It's almost meant to happen. How
yeah,
I can
sure.
combine
right.
these things, you know?
Great. Well, Sue, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. We're sounds like we need to talk again in a few months. How quickly you guys are growing, it'll have to be a few weeks, but we'll stay in touch, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the growth of Bally's. I did buy a few shares of stock, so I'll
thank you for being a shareholder, and like I say to all of our shareholders, I'm optimistic, and I'll make sure I work never to disappoint. I mean, we obviously are the largest shareholder. We just so you know, we take nothing out. I don't even take a fee.
Yeah.
Pay my own expenses.
Mm-hmm.
I do my board service as volunteer work because it's just so compelling. What's happening in our industry.
Yeah.
And this company specifically. So I have never been more engaged in my investing
great
life. So
well, we will definitely stay in touch. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Roger.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by IGT. Your players will experience the convenience of digital transactions throughout your resort property with IGT's resort wallet. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. And to learn more about Bally's Corporation and how the plan to develop into a national brand is happening, visit ggbmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.